Well, thank you, Nick. I also want to acknowledge some of my co-authors, a couple who are in the audience. Harold Corman, I think he's here, as well as Marion Green up here. As Nick said, I'm chair of the Indiana State Epidemiology and Outcomes Work Group, or SEOW, and this is where this work started. However, we have now since expanded it because the Indiana Professional Licensing Agency has asked us to do a comprehensive evaluation of Indiana's PMDP. And so this is the first step in a much larger series of projects, which I'll be talking about. I don't have any financial or nor do my co-authors to disclose. However, I should note that our was funded by the Indiana Division of Mental Health and Addiction as well as the IPLA. I'm going to blast through a few introductory slides because you're starting to see a theme, and if you've been to some of the other plenary sessions, we're all saying the same thing. It's becoming a huge problem, an epidemic or endemic, I think is probably a better description, but clearly it's becoming a problem. I think people know that opiates are widely dispensed in the United States, and there's been a dramatic growth in the dispensation of opiate analgesics. And there's been a parallel rise with the dispensation in a number of unfortunate consequences, including illicit use, ED visits, and fatal overdoses, some of which we've already heard about today. This, again, is Dr. Clark's slide, or a variation thereof, simply emphasizing the relationship between those who get the prescription and then sharing those with others. And this sort of chain, supply chain, as we've been calling it internally, is a very interesting dynamic. And as Dr. Clark emphasized yesterday, this is about the culture of how we think about medications generally, and we need to begin to work on digging deeper into that. Today, though, I'm going to be talking about sort of the supply side of this equation, sort of apropos to Alex's presentation initially, but we're going to be focusing this as a sociologist on the systems level. So where you've heard a lot about individual patterns of use and chains of events, we're going to talk about this at a socio-ecological level. And one of the reasons is that is because it bears worth saying, but it's kind of obvious, is to get access to opiates requires some sort of interaction with the healthcare system, either directly or indirectly, which does often implicate, and one of the challenges you have in doing this kind of work, I suspect my co-presenters have faced this, is that physicians in particular often get very defensive when you start talking about opiate abuse and changing practices. I think what has happened in the literature has been that there's been an increased sensitivity to thinking about prescription practices and talking about how those happen, why they do the things that they do, and there's some interesting issues we might want to discuss in the Q&A period. But also in the literature, in the health services literature, we've also know that there's extraordinary variation in access to healthcare on multiple levels. And so I walked into this project with the initial hypothesis that, in fact, you know, maybe it may vary on a geographic level with access to healthcare on multiple levels. And so this is the focus of this socio-ecological analysis. So our focus here is on analyzing local healthcare delivery system characteristics on the availability and abuse of prescription opioids, adjusting for local community characteristics. We have, this is a great and fun project. It's actually kind of overwhelming at times because of the massive amounts of data we're getting, but it's a secondary analysis, and we're focusing on the unit, county as a unit of analysis, and this is an unfortunate byproduct by the nature of some of the data sources we're working with, but it's also the policy unit that Indiana state government tends to use in making its sort of policy decisions. Now, we're relying on Indiana's version of the PMDP, which is InSpec. We're one of the early adopters, and we're actually sharing with 7 different states, including Arizona. I haven't quite figured out why we're sharing so far away, but most of our neighboring states, for those of you who don't know where Indiana is, we're one of those flyover states, you know, in the middle. Unless you come to the 500 in May, you never come to Indiana. We're nestled in there between Ohio and Illinois, states that people tend to know a little more about us. But we're interesting geographically because, in fact, Indianapolis is at the center of the state, and much of the issues that we face in our healthcare delivery system actually intersect with our neighboring cities because our urban areas outside of Indianapolis actually are adjacent to neighboring states. So we have some strange problems when it comes to working on health policy. So we're going to focus on the data from the InSpec system, which was implemented in Indiana in 2007. It became, I would say, fully operational, and data became much cleaner around 2010. We're going to focus on 2011 data today. And then we're also going to be using the TEDS data to actually use as a measure of opiate pain reliever abuse. This is the treatment episode data set that is collected through SAMHSA. We're going to measure socioeconomic context, and this is where you have to sort of remember we're focusing on that contextual level. So rather than think about individual characteristics, we're looking at population characteristics of counties. And so we're looking at the percentage of non-Hispanic whites, women ages 15 to 24, ages 45 and above, and so forth. And these all come from the American Community Survey, a U.S. Census data source. We also have access to percentage of individuals by the county that are enrolled in Medicaid, as well as we're using the TEDS data as a proxy for overall substance abuse burden. That's alcohol abuse, which is the most commonly abused substance in Indiana. To get measures of healthcare system, we actually have a number of sources. Indiana Hospital Databases gives us access to the emergency department data. Number of pharmacists came from Stats Indiana, as well as a wide variety of measures about different kinds of physicians and healthcare providers across the state, which come from the Indiana State Health Workforce Database. We also did something that is well understood in geography and geographic information circles, and that is to, because our data are clustered, we should be doing some geographic auto-clustering, or to recognize the geographic clustering, we need to do some auto-spatial correlation. So the two of the authors on the paper are actually geographers and have been helping us with that. Again, we're a flyover state. A lot of people don't know much about Indiana, so I thought I would emphasize that. We are largely, we have 92 counties, which is nice, a number to analyze. And we have a largely white population, with the majority of those who have access to health insurance. Our minority populations tend to be concentrated in the central Indiana surrounding Indianapolis and in the Gary Lake area, which is, some people consider that to be a suburb of Chicago. And then last, healthcare is not evenly distributed. Some refer to us as a very rural state, so we have high geographic concentrations of resources in our urban counties. Now, I know you probably can't read this, but these are the basic statistics of describing each of the individual counties. I'm not going to dwell on this, but you'll notice that a high level of urbanization, meaning there's some counties are much very urban and others are largely rural. But then you'll also notice that we have a number of variables here describing the distribution of our healthcare resources. So one of the interesting things that I share with policymakers when I talk about this particular issue is just the scope of the controlled epidemic, controlled substances in Indiana. And there were 12.7 million controlled substances dispensed in Indiana. Because we're using the INSPECT data, we're actually looking at those that were actually dispensed by a pharmacy, which must report to the state of Indiana. Of those, 6.2 million were for opiate analgesics. Now, that number sounds very large to me. It's even larger when you recognize that Indiana has 6.5 million people in the state. So that's almost one opiate prescription per Hoosier. For those of you who don't know Hoosiers, I'm not sure what they really mean, but it's those people who play basketball in Indiana. The model explained to this particular model where we're actually focusing on patterns of dispensation, about 74% of the variance. So it's actually a pretty good model, which is not uncommon when you're doing more macro-oriented analyses. This is a map of Indiana. It's kind of hard to see, but Marion County is right in the middle. I don't know if I can get an arrow to come up here. Oops. Nope. But it's sort of in the middle of the state, and it's clustering along the southern border, which actually is our border with Kentucky, who has also a significant problem with opiate abuse. And we think there is some cross-border issues going on between Indiana and Kentucky, as well as with Indiana and Ohio. Some of the SEOW chairs from across the region, the Ohio Valley region, have been talking about a chain of supply that's been moving across West Virginia, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. But this gives you a sense about where the prescriptions are. And again, here's the model. I'm going to focus on the red ones because those are the key findings from this paper. Having a larger percentage of people over the age of 45 is indicative of more prescription opiates being written. This is not terribly surprising. Clinical data would suggest that older folks, and this is how we derived our hypotheses, are more likely to receive an opioid prescription. So that's probably not terribly surprising. What was also surprising compared to some other studies which have tended to focus on Medicaid, we also focused on just access to health insurance, and we found that both individuals who were under 65 with private health insurance, as well as those individuals who are enrolled in Medicaid, have a significant increase in the number of prescription opiate prescriptions in a county. Perhaps the most interesting thing, whereas a lot of studies have been focusing on the prescription patterns of primary care physicians, we threw in a few others that we thought were kind of important. And interestingly enough, the major physicians groups were not actually implicated in terms of writing large numbers of prescriptions. The two groups that sort of jump out at us are, in fact, dentists per county, as well as pharmacists per county. Now, dentists is not a total surprise. There's some other studies that have sort of almost implicated dentists as being the problem of opiate prescriptions, and I'm will avoid sort of blaming any particular provider group. The one that's interesting to me was pharmacists, because a lot of people say, well, they don't prescribe. But in fact, one of the interesting things that's been happening in Indiana, and I suspect it may be true, has been there's the war of Walgreens and CVS. It seems to be that, you know, every time you turn around, you drive around, you know, anywhere in Indiana, this is rural and urban areas, you find that the minute a CVS goes up, a Walgreens goes up across the street, right? And I think what's been interesting is those two large chains have sort of taken over the markets and have expanded. We have done some previous analyses of prior years, but again, the data get a little messier in prior years. But actually, as CVS and Walgreens have expanded, the role of pharmacists have become more important in terms of accessing at the community level. And I think this, interestingly, is another potential control point that we have not heard a lot of people talking about. And then the average per capita of opiate prescriptions in neighboring counties, again, underlines the fact that these are clustering among counties, and that's not evenly distributed in Indiana. Now, turning to the abuse of opiate analgesics, we've had some data here, which I won't dwell on because of time, but we had a significant rise in treatment admissions, again, in the TEDS, which many of you know is a has a lot of limitations with it because it tends to be low-income individuals, doesn't capture private admissions, but we had a significant increase in a relatively short period of time for opiate analgesics, and that's true of just admissions generally, but also for opiate analgesics. And again, here the model explained a significant percentage of the variance. Again, you'll see some patterning here. The darker colors sort of overlapping. If you go back to the other map, which I'll go right there, there's sort of a southern sort of scoop, if you will, along the border with Louisville and Ohio in terms of admissions. Now, again, here, interestingly enough, the model's basically the same, but interesting different outcomes here. One of which, and as a sociologist, I think this is really interesting to me, is the role of the unemployment. I think, again, this is 2011, so we're still deep in the recession in this period of time. And I think one of the things that a lot of people did not sort of think too much about, it, the role of the recession in driving up opiate use and people turning and one could argue maybe it's sort of, you know, just simply another form of substance abuse that often tends to increase when recession, or it could also be somatization of pain associated with lower, more economically hard-hit areas. We also found that more substance abuse in a county also correlated with more, so again, the clustering of admissions. And perhaps most important, nothing else seemed to matter when it came to abuse, well, except for the amount of prescriptions that were available and floating around in that community. Again, reinforcing some of the systems thinking that Alex was emphasizing there. So I think what's interesting about this analysis, which may seem kind of some people have a duh reaction to this analysis. But I think what's important about this is that the different focus on here in terms of understanding the infrastructure of the healthcare system and that rates of abuse in the county were significantly associated with abuse. And I think this is something that Dr. Jones emphasized yesterday when he was sort of tracking the just simply the market data, which is one way of looking at this, and the rates of use. But in our case, we are focusing on PMDP data, which is an unusual way of looking at this, but I think as other states have started using their PMDP data to look at these kind of issues, we might understand this at a broader level. There also is important is the access to healthcare and the structure of the local healthcare delivery systems is very important, and it's geographically clustered. And I think we tend to sort of often get caught up in the national statistics and think this is an even problem. The data here, including our maps, suggests it's not. Perhaps more importantly, though, my colleague, particularly Andy Chambers, who's a psychiatrist who specializes in addictions treatment, and I have sort of gone on a rampage now talking about the iatrogenic epidemic of prescription drug use, and that this is a problem that has been created by our healthcare system, both in terms of the prescribing patterns, but also in terms of the structure of the healthcare system. And I think one of the things that we can do is begin to take ownership of this problem and begin to address it. But this presents us with some very complicated slippery slopes. Being based on a medical center, I'm often confronted by some of my colleagues who do treat pain and with patients who have very legitimate needs for pain medications. And one of the problems is that we look on the supply side, there's a potential for us to overcompensate and begin to shut down access to opiates to people who actually need them. And I think as we've gotten better at understanding pain, and I think there's a whole new growing area that needs to be expanded in understanding the experience of pain, biologically and socially, that we need to sort of think about that carefully before we begin to clamp down. And I think I was somewhat disheartened because a lot of the conversation yesterday in the plenary was really about controlling the supply. While that's an important piece of the pie, I was heartened when Dr. Clark got up and talked about dealing with the culture, but it's also about dealing with the patient's experience and how they're coming to the healthcare system for help with pain needs that could be addressed perhaps with other mechanisms. We also need to work with healthcare provider groups, and this is where we've been focusing a lot of attention. Our Attorney General has formed a prescription drug task force, which is now about 2 years old, and it includes a number of subcommittees. It's a very ominous group, and I thought it wasn't going to be very effective. It has 150 members, but actually it's turned out to be very effective, and they actually just last week released a toolkit for providers to help them make better decisions about prescribing, and that's a big step in the state of Indiana. But we have a long way to go to educate providers about the importance of addiction and recognizing addiction, something that also came out last Friday at the AGE's conference. But we also need to sort of acknowledge that access to health care may contribute directly and indirectly to the problem. A couple of the limitations, obviously Indiana, being a flyover state, nobody goes there except the people who live there, may not be general to other states, but we have the marketing term to describe the state of Indiana as the crossroads of Indiana, and our world seems to intersect with what's going on in our neighboring states, and I think we're probably more indicative of many Midwestern states than some people like to think about us. We also did an ecological analysis, which again is very important here because we don't want to do the ecological fallacy and blame individual providers here. While we mentioned dentists and pharmacists, I view that as a structural thing in terms of how the practice of those professions are doing. It's not about we're not trying to find bad dentists or bad pharmacists, but there's a systems level effect here that I think is very important to explore more. And again, those who use the TEDS data will know that our measure of opiate abuse is actually not good, but again, it reinforces other conclusions that others have made with others who have done analyses with other more generalizable data. So here's my contact information. This is the beginning. I'll mention in the interest of, Signe is actually going to be, she's been matching it with the fatality data or the mortality data, we're actually going the other direction. We're matching to licensure data. And so I'd be happy to talk about some of the challenges we're facing that, but we're actually, every prescription in Indiana now we can match to license data, which is going to allow us to do a lot of really interesting things, actually like map where the prescription was written, where it was filled, and where the patient lives by zip code. And we don't want any identifying information because the Drug Enforcement Agency is floating around my life, and I don't want to get involved in any kind of stings of bad providers. But understanding that supply chain is where we're going next with these data. So thank you very much.